It is no accident that, as the web rises, the traditional political parties decline. As the 2008 presidential election approached, there were as many voters registered as independents or unaffiliated as Democrat or Republican. Voters have become wary of one-size-fits-all, pre-fixed party agendas. Americans pick and choose. I've tried to lay out the menu of arguments as they exist in nature, if you will, independent of the parties that, over the years, have taken all sides in them. The political parties have shriveled as conduits for collective expression, a phrase that has a deservedly musty 20th century feel to it. In the new millennium, voters are taking it upon themselves and must take it upon themselves to make their own case. Think of this as a briefing program for a nation of citizen candidates. The internet is their campaign trail, YouTube their advertising campaign. Involvement is also an antidote to media truthiness. As Jameson of Penn points out, the internet is allowing a speedier response to false claims and TV ads and false reports on the news. In this new era, everybody is her own fact checker. We've been here before. My fifth goal is to offer a sense of perspective in the midst of what, to many, seems like a gloomy period in our national life. The lesson of looking at the 13 arguments and their history is sobering, to be sure. They have a sense of inescapability that can be unnerving, like a political version of Bill Murray's living nightmare in Groundhog Day. Immigration is perhaps the most vivid these days, but all of the arguments are alive on the front page. It will always be that way. On the other hand, it is comforting and inspiring to know, in essence, that we have been here before, that we have been in similar predicaments and not only survived, but triumphed, working out ways to preserve freedom and yet inch ever closer to the ideals of justice. We have felt overwhelmed by immigrants before and survived. We have felt threatened by overbearing, secretive presidents in wartime and survived. We have erupted in bellicosity toward the world and survived. We have laid waste to our environment and it has survived. The economy and the dollar have been devastated before, and they have survived. What is required to move forward is something more than luck. What is required is that we dig deep down into our history to find the countervailing insights and rediscover the enduring ideas that can set us right. It's all in our DNA, the double helix of our contentious and complex history. There is nothing wrong with America that cannot be cured by what is right with America, Bill Clinton said in his first inaugural address. And he was right. Be thankful. Last, we need to appreciate our uniqueness and strive to be worthy of it. We have been blessed with history's best chance to live in the space created by equipoise among the brute forces that forever vie for dominion over mankind and society. In shorthand, they are the state, the church, the market, the tribe, and the academy, science. Balance among them produced the golden ages in the history of mankind. But let any of these five forces achieve untrammeled control, and slavery is the inevitable result. So far, we have avoided the fate of Stalin's Soviet Union, the Taliban's Afghanistan, Dickens's London, the mob's Sicily, or Huxley's Brave New World. Our best hope lies in keeping each of the basic forces forever in countervailing conflict with one another. Let them make accommodation. Never let them collude. Freedom exists in the space created by equipoise among them. There is no such equipoise on most of the planet. From the great cities of China to the mountain caves of Afghanistan, there is no faith in the idea of argument. Most of humanity pays allegiance to only one eternal answer, whether it is a sacred text or a revolutionary party. I first saw that dangerous allegiance as a student on a visit to the old Soviet Union in 1970. On my first night in Kiev, I checked into a hotel. The Spartan room had a desk with a lamp and a modern-looking radio. As I examined the radio more closely, I noticed something odd and chilling. It had no dial, only an on-volume switch. I was in a country with only one voice, the government's. In the never-ending aftermath of Al-Qaeda's 9/11 attack, we face constant reminders of the hatred and ferment that face us. Yet in spite of the bloodshed, indeed because of it, we have to remain willing to argue in good faith among ourselves. We have to prove again that argument is strength, not weakness, and that freedom and security can live together. How do we do so? By making sure that people know they have a chance to be heard. The American way breeds unsettling conflict, but argument is what leads to consent, and consent is what leads to legitimacy. People accept outcomes that they deplore because they think the process gives their point of view a chance. As long as we argue, there is hope, and as long as there is hope, we will argue. In Democracy in America, Alexis de Tocqueville saw genius in this. To take a hand in the regulation of society, he said, was our biggest concern and, so to speak, the only pleasure an American knows. This ceaseless agitation, he wrote, creates an all-pervading and restless activity, a superabundant force, and an energy which is inseparable from it and which may, however unfavorable circumstances may be, produce wonders. These, he concluded, are the true advantages of democracy. The ceaseless agitation is what this program is about. It's the story of the 13 American arguments.